I need. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to this April 29th, 2015 meeting of the Senate Committee on Workforce. We have three bills that we're going to be hearing today that were very successful over on the House side, and we'll see what we can do to either continue that success or not. And we're going to go at them in the following order. We're going to start with House Bill 2684. Is that right?
Sure, we can do that.
Yeah. And then 2213 and then 2716. Okay, so Matt, will you tell us what 2684 is, please?
Yes. Let me grab my board. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2684A extends to January 2nd, 2026, the exemption allowing retired members of the public employees retirement system to be employed full-time by a public employer as a nursing instructor or as a trainer for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training without loss of retirement benefits. This bill on the House side was evaluated by LFO and LRO and was found to have no impact from either.
Okay, thank you, Matt. Okay, can we have Jack Dempsey and Jana Britton and Eric Skablix, please? Jack, did you want to start us off? No?
No,
thank you.
He's going to let me do it.
Great. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Demroe and Vice Chair Thatcher and the rest of the committee. My name is Jana Bitten, and I am the Executive Director for the Oregon Center for Nursing, and I'm here to speak on behalf of House Bill 2684, as it will be allowing nurse educators to continue to continue working in their capacity without losing any benefits from the public employees retirement system. You have my testimony in front of you, so I'm not going to read it exactly so we can get through everything on the agenda. Just to give you a little update, or just to let you know a little bit about the Oregon Center for Nursing, we are the state's nursing workforce center. We collect information on the nursing workforce to try to identify issues that might be affecting the workforce so we can proactively make course corrections to ensure that there are good quality nurses that can meet the needs of the Oregonians. One of the tools that was implemented in 2007 with Senate Bill 4 was this extension to allow experienced nurses who work for state organizations to be able to continue to continue to work without losing their PERS benefit after they retire. This has actually been a tool that we can't really gauge what the effectiveness necessarily is of this tool, but one thing that we do know is that the shortage of nursing faculty in the state is pretty significant, and some of the issues that the solutions that we have tried in the past, it's not that they failed, it's just this is a long-term problem with long-term solutions. The nursing community as a whole has done things like started new programs for new graduate programs for nursing educators so we can try to educate more nurses to become nurse educators so that there could be more faculty. We also have started other programs such as academic and practice partnerships so that we can alleviate some of the workload of nurse faculty incent them to remain in the workforce. We are asking for an extension of this particular sunset on this PERS exemption because our solutions that we have, we need more time to be able to build up the nursing workforce, and with this extension, we think that that will definitely help us. As in the testimony, one of the things that I noted is that the Oregon Center for Nursing has been doing research on the nursing faculty workforce since 2009, and the one thing that we know is that there's two main reasons why nurse faculty choose not to become nurse faculty. The number one is the pay rate, and the number two is this the aging demographic of the nursing workforce that we're really struggling with. We are facing a large retirement of nurse faculty members that are coming up. And we actually are projecting that we will think we might need 117 new nurse faculty sometime in the next 10 years. That doesn't seem very significant, but when you think of our numbers of nurse faculty is between 700 and 800, that's about us, that's more than a that's a big chunk of our nurse faculty that we will be losing to retirement. We want to make sure that we have the programs in place and the incentives in place to be able to replace that. So we feel that House Bill 2684 is going to give that incentive to experienced nurses so they can stay in the workforce. We can continue to educate the nurses that we have, the nurses that we have, encourage them to become nurse faculty so we can continue to train the nurses and build and keep the strong nursing workforce in the state. And with that, thank you for this opportunity, and I'm open for any questions.
Thank you, Chairman.
Chair Dembrough, members of the committee, Jack Dempsey representing the Oregon Nurses Association. You also have our testimony on OLIS. Ms. Benton and here are also here on behalf of the Oregon Nursing Leadership Collaborative, which their testimony is online also. That's a group that's supporting this that includes the Oregon Center for Nursing, the Oregon Nurses Association, the deans of the schools, the associate degree programs, the Board of Nursing, and the nurse executives that are all supporting this. This is a pretty simple bill. As she said, it just extends the sunset to allow nursing instructors in public settings to work beyond the 1040 rule. The effect right now on nursing, if this went away, would be great. I believe, you know, anecdotally from OHSU are 40-plus instructors, and I would guess at least that many in our community colleges around the state. If those folks just went away, then we start our nursing shortage immediately, as opposed to another 5-plus years down the road. So as Ms. Benton said, you know, the lack of nursing instructors is, you know, the pinch in the hourglass that really, you know, stops the nurses from coming out on the other end of that. So we need to continue this. This is the only state incentive that's on the books that helps nurse faculty. There is a nurse faculty loan forgiveness program that's on the books that hasn't been funded for a couple sessions. That is something that might come back up in future sessions. So with that, I encourage you to support the bill. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough, members of the committee. My name is Eric Skablix. I'm the Director of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, DPSST. And as many of you know, we serve 41,000 public safety constituents in the state of Oregon, police, fire, corrections, 911, et cetera. And we operate the Oregon Public Safety Academy right here on Almsville Highway in Salem on 235 acres. We provide entry-level and advanced training to Oregon's public safety community. When the Nurses Association introduced this bill, we were having discussions internally about the same challenges you just heard on the law enforcement and public safety side. They were kind enough to let us piggyback on their bill initially. They did the same thing with this bill, and we're appreciative of that. And the same issues you had in nursing affect us for public safety. So our number of instructors is smaller because of the population that we serve. But we right now have 6 full-time positions that are PERS retirees that have a world of experience and a world of knowledge that they're giving back, and that's very beneficial to the students entering the profession. So we much appreciate the opportunity here in front of you, and that's the issue and why we're in front of you.
Thank you very much. Let me say first off that, you know, the issue that we're dealing with is actually, I don't usually think of nursing as a CTE area, but it obviously is, and the same thing with police training, safety training. This is a problem that we're seeing, you know, throughout the world of career education, technical education, is how can we find people who will leave industry and become teachers to teach that next generation. And I think, you know, just really smart retirement planning that allows somebody to move from, or maybe, you know, at the end of their career to combine, industry work with teaching and then move into teaching just makes a lot of sense, I think, as we're looking forward. So, you know, I do agree this is an important tool. And I will say, Jan, at some point we want to have a hearing on the issue of, healthcare workforce development, yeah. And would love to have you folks do great work at the center. So,
yeah,
lucky to be part of it.
I'd be happy to share.
Great. Any other questions in this panel? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. I typically, as you know, I've been involved a lot in the PERS issue, and I'm usually anti-double dipping. But I think in this particular case, in your massively long bill that it took me a long time to read, I think for targeted situations it's appropriate. And I think these are two of the most targeted that we could do that would solve a significant problem. And so although usually I am not a fan of double dipping, I think in this particular case it makes a lot of sense policy-wise for these two. So I'm going to be supportive of the bill, and you know, Jack, you can respond to the length of the bill. I don't understand why you had to spend so much paper in order to make this bill go. But
Chair Dembro, Senator Knope, not to comment on that, but comment on the policy. I mean, I would agree with you that the policy of the double dipping is generally across the board not where we want to go. But as you rightly acknowledge, I mean, if you want to be a nursing faculty instructor in this state, there's a job available for you. This is not going to put anyone out of work anytime in the near future, and this is just going to hold on to the pieces that we already have. So appreciate that.
Any other questions, colleagues? Okay, thank you very much. We'll schedule a work session on this for Monday, or perhaps we have already.
No. I think we have. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, with that, I'm going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2684 and going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2213. And we have Becky Gallagher and Steve Caputo and Nick Koval, please. So whoever wants to start, please start.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Dembro and members of the Senate Workforce Committee. Thank you for hearing our testimony today in support of House Bill 2213, which passed unanimously out of the House. My name is Becky Gallagher, and I'm a partner at the law firm of Fenwick & Gallagher. I've been an attorney for approximately 17 years, and we specialize in public safety, labor organizations, bargaining in Oregon and Washington. I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees, called AOCE. AOCE represents close to 800 Department of Corrections employees at four different institutions: the Oregon State Penitentiary, Oregon State Correctional Institution, Mill Creek Correctional Facility, and South Fork Forest Camp over in Tillamook. We are here today in support of House Bill 2213, which would expand our ability to bargain over safety-related issues for the corrections professionals that were basically left out when the law was changed back in 2007. So we were able to bargain an expansion to the definition of employment relations back then and include strike-prohibited law enforcement. Based on that, anybody in AOCE's bargaining unit that wasn't a corrections officer, corrections corporal, or corrections sergeant did not have the ability to bargain over safety issues or safety changes where the officers could. If there was a change or an issue inside with Department of Corrections, we, AOCE, had to find a way to bargain to the impact it had for the officers, even if in reality it was an impact to one of those corrections professionals. An example I will give is when there was a proposed change on whether or not death row inmates should be allowed to self-administer insulin injections. We couldn't argue over the safety of the nurses who may be providing those injections or trying to retrieve them. We had to bargain the safety or impact on the officers who may have to do some form of cell extraction or assist the nurse. So we're really here to close that loophole, if you will, that didn't allow us to bargain over the specific safety impacts on the corrections professionals. We have had numerous times where demands to bargain had been filed with the Department of Corrections to bargain over safety for officers, corporals, and sergeants. And in each of those times, we were able to resolve the issue at the bargaining table with the Department of Corrections and the Department of Administrative Services. Therefore, we don't believe, based on that eight-year history, that this would have any financial impact to the Department of Corrections, since none of our prior issues have found its way to interest arbitration over the issue. So we believe that this will be beneficial to all, and we are urging you to support the bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, who's going to give us the truth from the ground?
Chair Dumbrow and members of the committee, my name is Steve Caputo. I work at Mill Creek Correctional Facility. I also pull shifts over at OSP, so I work a maximum and a minimum security mix. I'm the vice president for AOCE for Mill Creek also. And my job is a food service coordinator. I direct and supervise anywhere from 5 to 25 inmates at a time. If I was working at OSP, there would be three or four of us coordinators and then upwards of 75 to 80 inmates. These inmates have access to large tools, knives, which can all be used as weapons. It's a dangerous atmosphere. It's not like where I would be like a CO with, you know, out in the yard with inmates. I'm in a closed area, lots of blind spots, very little line of sight with inmates who have ready access to items that can be used as weapons. We had a food service coordinator here not too long ago get attacked by an inmate because he was upset with him for something that happened 3 weeks prior. They keep track, they wait for their time. You don't know when something's gonna happen, you just know it's going to. We've got nurses who've been attacked, some, you know, rather viciously. I've been standing next to inmates who were attacked, so while I wasn't the main target, certainly collateral damage, you know, would be, you know, I would be a part of that. And we've even seen where other inmates, when they are attacked and large weapons are being used, it, again, you know, the total disregard for human life is very apparent when they're swinging something heavy. And so for that reason, we need to be included on this so they can help us negotiate training, which I've had to use defense and tactics before, and for, you know, to help make this area, our work areas, you know, safe and secure for us. So on that behalf, I urge you to support House Bill 2213, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Ms. Koval.
Chair Dembro, members of the committee, again, my name is Nick Koval. I'm a HVAC technician, a heating air conditioning technician for the penitentiary. I'm also the executive vice president for the AOCE for the correction professionals who are other than certified employees. When this bill was passed, we thought it was a great idea, and it still is a great idea. We didn't realize that it didn't include us. But through the years, right, we've, like Becky said, Ms. Gallagher said, we've had to be creative as to get the department to come to the table and talk and find a remedy for the issue. We've been able to do that without very much cost to anybody. But the biggest part is in dealing with this bill is that people need to realize that the correction officers aren't the only people that make that prison run. Right? There is a bunch of people that support them and walk inside, work right along. In my own world, I take people into tunnel or inmates into tunnels where I'm out of sight for could be up to 5 hours at a time. There's a lot can go on, so you have to know your inmates, you have to know your capabilities. The other issue is that in my 16 years, I've had three instances. Right, the training, if we could have gotten the department to conduct training and maybe given us some tools, right. Other people that may not have been so, could not have handled the situation as I handled it without harm to anybody. So we need to, or I guess we're in support of the bill. Or I mean, very much in support of the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Koval. So we haven't gotten any testimony from the Department of Corrections. So I assume they're not opposed to what's being talked about here. Do you have any sense of that?
It's our understanding that they do not have objections to the bill.
Right.
One concern voiced initially was if there was a financial impact, and they've realized in speaking with the Department of Administrative Services that there wasn't that financial impact.
Mm-hmm. Good. And so, you know, it sounds as if this would just sort of clarify the expectations, you know, that the parties will, you know, sit down in a collective bargaining setting or in a contract administration setting, as it were, and, you know, talk about these issues, resolve potential problems, and come up with solutions. Is that sort of the goal?
It's not simply clarifying. We are adding a group of employees. So right now, the only employees who can bargain are those strike prohibited. And technically, we have this group inside the AOCE that are not strike prohibited. They're not law enforcement. But they're in a mixed unit, so they can't strike for that reason. They just don't meet the law enforcement definition. So we would add those to the ability to bargain over on-the-job safety, just those DOC employees with working inside those institutions that have that direct inmate contact. They can now bargain if this bill passes.
Any questions of the panel, colleagues? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
All right, so with that, I'm going to close our public hearing on House Bill 2213. Again, we'll have a work session on this on Monday. And colleagues, I'd like to stand at ease for a moment. We're waiting for the person who's going to present, the legislator who's going to present the next bill. Is the House still in session?
Or? They are not, so he should be.
Okay, all right, so he should be here any second.
About it.
Okay, colleagues, we're back in session. And we are back in session to hear House Bill 2716. So I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2716. Matt, will you please tell us about this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2716 requires contracting agencies provide as a material condition of a public contract that a contractor remains certified as a disadvantaged minority, women, or emerging small business enterprise during the entire term of the contract if the contract was awarded on the basis of the contractor's certification. It requires contractors include a similar provision in subcontracts and requires that the contracting agency verify certification status of the contractor or subcontractor during the entire term of the contract and provides that the contracting agency may terminate the contract, allows them to require a contractor to terminate the subcontract, or pursue remedies for breach of contract if the contractor or subcontractor does not retain certification. The measure makes an exception for emerging small businesses that no longer qualify because of growth in employees or gross receipts, and it provides that the Oregon Business Development Department may independently impose civil penalties up to $5,000 for each violation of certification requirement if the contracting agency does not impose a civil penalty. This measure would become operative January 1st of 2016 and declares an emergency and is effective on passage. There is a fiscal impact issued for this when it was evaluated on the House side, but there is no revenue impact.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Matt. And colleagues, you may remember that we passed a bill, about a month ago, having to do with MWESBs that was focused on, preventing people who had bad records from bidding on jobs. This, I think, focuses more on those that are already underway. But Representative Frederick, it's great to have you here to tell us just what this bill is about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Demereaux. I am Representative Lou Frederick from District 43, North and Northeast Portland. Thank you, members of the committee, for hearing me. I bring you House Bill 2716 regarding how participation goals for public contracts are handled after the contracts are awarded and in the process of being fulfilled. Now, those of you who have been here a while know that I have followed this issue since I first got here. In fact, three of your people on your panel have heard some things about this before. I'll be brief with the historic information. I asked in 2011 for information regarding the level of participation by minority women and emerging small businesses in contracts awarded under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. The information I eventually got was telling. Participation by MWESB firms aggregated was small, but participation by minority firms was almost non-existent. What am I saying in terms of non-existent? 2,700 contracts awarded, 4 went to minority firms. Committees in past sessions have heard testimony about the difficulty that minority firms have in getting contracts. Some even testified that they've found it easier to get work out of the state rather than in Oregon. The complaints are being passed over early in the qualification process for prime contractors, only small contracts being available, increasing the overhead expense to apply for and administer many small contracts, and no opportunity to build capacity. In tough economic times, when large projects are scarcer, larger firms go after smaller contracts, squeezing the little guys out of the market entirely. Subcontracts are offered with margins too tight to allow subcontractors to prosper as businesses. Delayed payment to subcontractors. This is already illegal, but I've been told repeatedly that it's unenforceable in a complaint-driven system. Complaining is bad for business. And what I'm trying to get at here, using minority participation or certification as a minority firm as a selling point in a variety of ways that are not reflected in the performance of the contract. for instance, describing or promising a level of minority employment or subcontracting, but failing to maintain that level, or in many cases, any level. We've heard too many reports to dismiss of prime contractors setting up dummy subcontract firms to stand in for minority participation. We've also heard too many reports to dismiss of certified minority firms being solicited to allow their names to be used as minority participants without doing any of the work. And then also delayed payment remains still a major problem. Minority contractors are just looking for an opportunity to grow their businesses by landing and performing work. In many cases, the rungs of the ladder of success are full of businesses that got their starts in a time when minority contractors were not allowed to compete. Nobody is looking for a handout, just a chance to grow and prosper through work. The reason for this bill is that a complaint-driven system for opening some of these opportunities isn't working. The bill provides for follow-up that doesn't depend on aggrieved businesses to step out and make complaints, and for some consequences for gaming the system. Now, you might wonder what's different about this bill compared to SB 584, which you already passed. There are different parts of one picture. Senate Bill 584 addressed fraud in bidding for and performance under a contract. This bill addresses the problem of firms that fail to remain qualified during the term of a contract. The amendments adopted in the House both clarify the bill and represent a degree of compromise. Believe me, I have heard from business owners in the community who believe that we backed down. People who have struggled with these issues for years desperately want somebody to be in charge of policing this process, monitoring contracts for continued compliance, and proactively investigating whether participation levels cited to procure contracts are actually genuine. This desire reflects a lack of trust in the system. The adopted amendment removed prescriptions for documentation and investigation to verify continued compliance with the requirements in the bill, as the administrative costs and barriers appear prohibitive at this time. The bill retains the core concept, changing this from a strictly complaint-driven process to one that holds contractors accountable for commitments they make, but without prescribing how verification will take place. The adopted amendment also clarifies that subcontractors and the contracts under which they operated are covered in the bill and exempted the emerging businesses where they cease to be emerging during the term of the contract due to growth or maturity. It's said that when the economy sneezes, the black community gets pneumonia. Minority businesses struggle to achieve the kind of capacity and stability required for resilience. We often talk about jobs as if that were all it takes to describe a recovering economy. But we need business and professional opportunities that increase capacity and economic activity at the neighborhood level. That's how we increase employment and the quality of employment. When the public contracting process participates fully in opening opportunities for businesses to thrive and grow, the entire economy thrives and grows. I urge you to pass this bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions of Representative Frederick? I will say that I received a call from a constituent last week who was very concerned about the bill. Because of some his concerns about what would happen to his firm, he's an emerging small business, if it were to grow beyond, you know, the allowable level during the course of the contract. He has some contracts that he's in the middle of, and he thinks he may actually get beyond that threshold. So he's very concerned about it, and that's because he was reading the introduced version of the bill,
right.
And you know, we saw the amendments, and the amendments addressed all of his concerns, and you know, gave him you know, the flexibility, you know, and the incentive to keep trying to grow,
right,
even though he's in the middle of a 3 or 4 year contract.
Well, that was one of the points that we the amendments were trying to do, and also, frankly, just applaud him that he's growing. I'm impressed.
Well, things are picking up again.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I guess I have one small question.
Sure.
And I don't know if it's all that big of a deal, but you just mentioned multi-year contracts, and sometimes a subcontractor has work at the front end and not
at the,
you know, 3 or 4 years down. You know, it's like their portion is done within a few months of the beginning of the contract, and I guess then it doesn't matter? I mean, does it it really wouldn't matter. I guess it wouldn't be affected by this bill.
I don't think that would be affected by the bill at all. Yeah. No.
Okay.
No. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for bringing this bill and for its obvious success over on the House side.
Yep, that was I was very pleased. Thank
Great.
You.
Yes, we'll have a work session on this on Monday.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, colleagues, with that, I'll close our public hearing on House Bill 2716. And I'm sorry, we have nothing more to do, so I will reluctantly put us into adjournment. Let me put us into adjournment.